Come in, Gary, come in. My secretary told me she conveyed my instructions to you to not set foot in my office until you had written one of the three greatest screenplays of all time. Your presence confirms either an astounding amount of arrogance and or ignorance, or that this outrageous request I have made has been honored. Please, Gary, what have you got for me?
It's called Hooked Bear.
Hooked Bear. A devastating look into addiction and what it can do to a gentle giant of a man. Is it a disease or a choice we make to hide ourselves and those around us? Where must we turn when, in order to live, we slowly kill ourselves? This sounds like the role of a lifetime. I'm predicting this being the first movie to be so powerful it sweeps the Oscars 3 years in a row. Tell me, Gary, what would be the arresting first scene people think of when they think back on the start of Hooked Bear?
Fishing season has begun.
Fishing season has begun. You know, Gary, 34 years ago, another movie began with a simple phrase displayed on screen. 10 words, one comma, and three periods grouped together to form an ellipsis. The movie was Star Wars, and the phrase read, "A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away." After that phrase appeared on screen, film, nay, culture, was never the same again. Of course, we all know how that story ends. Ewoks. An animated feature starring Jabba the Hutt's kidnapped son, Stinky. Lines of dialogue such as, "Misa day startin' pretty okie day, with a brisky morning munchie, then boom, getting very scared and grabbing that Jedi and pow!" Yet none of the abominations that now comprise the majority of George Lucas's body of work ever started with a phrase as numbingly mundane as, "Fishing season has begun."
J. Audubon Woodlore goes in a boat and gets fishes.
Does he, Gary? Does J. Audubon Woodlore go in a boat and get fishes? Tell me, does the act of getting fishes resemble what a normal human being might call fishing? Or is it different? Some sort of twisted ritual done under the inky blackness of a moonless night that no poison with a fiber of morality would ever participate in? "Why must you do this, my husband?" shrieks J. Audubon Woodlore's wife as their newborn son begins to cry in her arms. "Stay here tonight. This isn't you." J. Audubon Woodlore pauses in the doorway. He turns, looks at the woman he once loved, and wishes he could love again, wishing there were some way to explain to her what he must do. But as he realizes there is not, he simply takes a deep breath, exhales, turns, and marches out into the void to get fishes. Somewhere in the distance, a lone wolf howls.
Here's Humphrey the Bear playing with one fish.
Here's a powerful executive thinking his afternoon could have been better spent trying on new golfing hats. You may not know this, Gary, but though I excel at it, I loathe golfing. It presents far too few opportunities for crushing one's enemies for my refined tastes. So for me to prefer trying on not only golf clothes, but the golfer's hat, considered by many to be the least essential portion of any golfing ensemble, this truly indicates how abysmally your pitch for Hooked Bear is going.
He uses a ruler to make fishes in sizes.
Let me see if I've got this straight. Humphrey the Bear, no longer content to merely play with one fish, has begun infringing upon the domain of the Almighty God and started making fish himself. How does this heretic go about this act of blasphemy? How does Humphrey, from nothingness, spring something, namely fishes, into existence? He uses a ruler. Oh, Gary, it is no business of mine how you while away your hours on this planet once you leave the mahogany walls of this office, though I do have some very unflattering assumptions. But this dark science of creating light through rulers, which you evidently believe is possible, and have likely experimented with in some gruesome basement lab, has chilled me to the core. But what's this? There's more drivel in this sentence? He uses the ruler to make fishes in sizes? Oh, well, in that case, fire up the ruler, Gary! As long as he's making fishes in sizes, Humphrey the Bear God can do whatever the hell he wants!
Here's Humphrey the Bear playing with one fish.
Here's a powerful executive thinking his afternoon could have been better spent trying on new golfing hats. You may not know this, Gary, but though I excel at it, why am I, and more importantly, why are you repeating yourself, Gary? Humphrey the Bear is playing with one fish! This, as insignificant and deadeningly dull as it may be, has been thoroughly established!
J. Audubon Woodlore gets more fish for fishing rods.
The grim dance that is the fish-getting continues. But what's this? There is a purpose to the fish getting. Some sort of goal, an insight into why J. Audubon Woodlaw engages in this occult ritual, despite the inner yearning of his soul to remain pure and good. Yes, there is a goal. He gets more fish for fishing rods! And then these fishing rods made of fish will undoubtedly be used to get more fishes, and the perpetual cycle of horrificness continues unabated! Hearing of your fishing pole made of fishes, Gary, I am reminded of the Ouroboros, better known to you laymen as the snake eating its own tail. Plato, a figure many consider to be of at least modest importance, and to whom, Gary, I'm sure your only knowledge of is mistaking him for the third guy Bill and Ted bring back in time with them, once described the Ouroboros thusly. The living being had no need of eyes, when there was nothing remaining outside him to be seen, nor of ears, when there was nothing to be heard. There was no surrounding atmosphere to be breathed. I can see your eyes glossing over, Gary. Of design, he was created thus, his own waste providing his own food, and all that he did or suffered taking place in and by himself. Plato was wise, Gary, in his description of a blind, deaf creature subsisting on its own waste, and perhaps he might be encouraged that his philosophical theories not only survive in the modern era, but are sitting in front of my office right now pitching a movie!
Humphrey gets a fish bag, fishing rods, and a net.
Why, Gary, it sounds as if Humphrey is intending to get fishes. What might his fishing rod be constructed of? Might it be a traditional carbon fiber rod, prized for the precise positioning of the bait? Or perhaps a telescoping Japanese Tenkara rod? Or maybe he's sporting one of the newest ultralight sport fishings. I hear those are great for hauling in bluegills. I interpret your silence as confirmation of my worst fears, that none of these are correct, and that much like J. Audubon Woodlaw, Humphrey the Bear's fishing rods are made of fish as well. Please do not tell me that you have gone to the trouble of fabricating prototypes of these horrible fishing rods, because if there's one in my office, I will lose my cool, Gary, and it will not be pretty! Also, a fish bag, I'm not sure that's a real thing.
J. Audubon Woodlore takes them, gets fish seeds to put in the water like soil.
Fish seeds? Why, I've never heard of such a thing, Gary. Clearly this is an oversight of my own, having lived several successful decades on this earth without knowledge of the fact that fish can be grown from seeds. For you would never make up something as temple-throbbingly idiotic as fish seeds, so I assume they must exist. But Gary, why have you kept this knowledge to yourself? The last I checked, UNICEF and the Red Cross were not employing fish seeds in developing nations to relieve the famine that has stricken them. It seems like fish seeds might prove the perfect solution to growing a protein-rich and renewable food source. And yet you sit here, Gary, possessing this knowledge, which could not only empower these unfortunate people, but could easily save the lives of millions of children. Children who still have promise, who could grow up to achieve something. Who could do the world good to counteract what you bring into it on an hourly basis, and you choose not to share it. By depriving Africa of fish seeds, Gary, you are the greatest monster the world has ever known! Sheila, if anyone in the waiting room heard that last outburst, please inform them it made perfect sense in context.
Humphrey's trying to eat the small fish, but one fish jumps and Humphrey throws it.
What's amazing, Gary, is how far this story has progressed in such a short period of time. It wasn't long ago that fishing season began. But already, who can keep track of the twists and turns? I'm worried that the average viewer may not be able to follow what the characters are up to. Speaking of the characters, what were their names again? It's difficult to remember because you haven't mentioned them that often. And when you have, you haven't used their full name, so it's hard to J. Audubon Woodlaw and Humphrey the Bear, as you have incessantly and compulsively reminded us!
J. Audubon Woodlore makes a rainbow with fishes, and Humphrey gets some fish with a small fish, and J. Audubon Woodlore goes in a boat and uses a ruler and see if the fish is so small and hits Humphrey on the head, and the boat scratches Humphrey's head, and Humphrey gets the fish, and a fish balloon pops.
Holy crap!
Humphrey stubs his toe and says, ow, 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 and J. Audubon Woodlore holds two buckets of fish, then Humphrey gets the hat from under the boat.
Gary, The nonlinear framework of this story you were telling, the fact that the events seemed to have no relation to anything that happens before or after them, the fact that we did not even know Humphrey had a hat, let alone that it was under the boat, makes me fear that this movie of yours is morphing into a horrible art film. The kind of film where a single tear ascends back into a clown's eye as he watches children in swine masks play Ring Around the Rosie around a disemboweled horse. What's terrifying is that I am unable to decide which direction I would prefer the movie to go in. Choosing between the insane art vision this is drifting towards and the straight-ahead dreck you normally present to me, I find my eye glancing out of habit towards the loaded dueling pistol I keep in my wall safe. But therein presents a different dilemma, Gary. Whether I use it on myself to end this misery now, or whether I turn the pistol on you and hope that the substantial quarterly bribes I pay to the police commissioner are enough for him to turn a blind eye to the deceased screenwriter. Will anyone notice him missing, he'll ask, as his deputies haul your rapidly stiffening corpse out of my office. It's unlikely, I'll reply, though I never inquired about his personal life. I could picture the solitary and squalid nature of it. He most likely burned bridges and cheated those closest to him out of their possessions. Our only worry ought to be an overabundance of mourners showing up to spit on his grave. Now dump that stiff someplace where the smell won't bother anyone important, and find someone homeless or crazy, or ideally a combination of both to pin it on.
Humphrey goes deep with his hat on, and a Finn is heading towards the five people, and they run away from Humphrey with his hat on, and takes his hat off and collects the fish bags and carries them to the fish airplane and pours the fish in.
A fish airplane? Who are the five people? And Humphrey going deep with his hat on had better not be some sort of perverse sexual innuendo known only to the struggling screenwriters that engage in it in the back alleys of our nation's 24-hour greasy spoon diners. What are you in for, says an inmate to another as they await bail. Drunk in public, he says. How about you? I solicited a hooker to let me go deep with my hat on behind a Shoney's. Turned out she was a cop. As the rest of the holding cell inches away from this deviant, the ears of the hardened inmates pike up, knowing that anyone convicted of going deep with his hat on is on the receiving end of some of the worst punishment the prison showers have to offer.
He gets one fish, and J. Audubon Woodlore has dressed as a pilot, ready to take the flight, and the fish fall, and Humphrey stubs his toe from the closing, and the fish fall, but Humphrey tries to eat them, and he falls.
Gary, come clean with me. One day you were aimlessly walking through the park, killing time between consuming fast food meals with your shirt off, when you stumbled across two squirrels performing improv comedy. Attempting to transcribe the unknowable language of squirrels, you saw a Japanese man, but upon closer inspection you discovered that he was taking notes in German. Despite his intense focus on what must have been a hilarious sketch apparently set at the DMV being performed by the two squirrels, you managed to draw out of them that, no, in fact, he was not a native German speaker, but was doing his best. Just then a rowdy dog appeared, barking and frothing at the squirrels, who quickly fled to the nearest tree. The Japanese-German translator, realizing the futility of presenting his boss with a half-completed sketch translation for, yes, Gary, he was doing this at the request of an employer, ditched his notebook on the ground. You picked it up, realized that you could not read German, and were about to toss it away when, what's this? The dog that chased the improv squirrels away has left a nice, steaming pile of crap where they once performed. And you, Gary, presented this excrement with the Japanese man's notes, and the pile of crap then translated the German into English for you, and you have now attempted to pass it off as your own original work to me. Does this seem far-fetched? I admit it does. And yet I would still rather believe that this is how the screenplay for Hooked Bear came into existence, rather than it being the sole product of one man's pitiful imagination and gross lack of talent.
J. Audubon Woodlore receives a call on the telephone from his superior to see if he's still stocking the lake with fish. Ranger Woodlore told him he was, but was told to stop because fishing season ended the previous day.
I take it J. Audubon Woodlore's reaction to this discovery of his incompetence is not to make a rainbow with fishes?
In shock, J. Audubon Woodlore cuts everyone's fishing lines, chases other fishermen away, and throws all the caught fish out of the bucket and yells, "Fishing season's over," and draws an X on the fishing open sign and flips it over to the hunting season now open, and it has begun for Humphrey.
Bravo, Gary! Your screenplay is M. Night Shyamalan-esque in its vapidity, brainlessness, utter incoherence, and soul-deadening effects. Also, I guess because it has a twist ending. And speaking of a twist ending, Gary, press this button. Go on, press it! You'll notice the walls have collapsed around us, revealing that we're actually in the middle of a sunny green field. You know why, Gary? Because it was all a facade created to bamboozle you. The walls, the furniture, everything. You can't get the hell out of my office because we were never in my office to begin with! But seriously, Gary, get the hell out of wherever we actually are.